This episode of the MGMA podcast is brought to you by Walmart Business. It's the Walmart you love, now for business. Get everything you need for your staff and patients in one place. Enjoy big savings on health and safety products, cleaning supplies, over-the-counter medications, and much more. And don't forget the break room snacks. Create a free account today and start shopping at business.walmart.com. That's business.walmart.com. Introducing First Call Triage, your ultimate remote medical staffing solution. With their office hours nurse triage line, front office services, including appointment scheduling and insurance verification, and back office services, managing medication refills and prior authorizations, First Call Triage can streamline your practice's operations. Plus, their remote patient monitoring and chronic care management ensure comprehensive patient care. So make the right call. First Call Triage is the first and only call you need for efficient, cost-effective, and high-quality medical staffing. So visit their website at firstcalltriage.com to revolutionize your practice. Again, that's firstcalltriage.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the latest edition of Women in Healthcare Podcast with Medical Group Management Association. My name is Adrienne Lloyd, and I am so honored today to have Carrie Coe, who has been a longtime friend and initially former colleague of mine. I met her actually when I was interviewing for my fellowship at Mayo Clinic. She was one of the first people I got to talk to, and she was doing a really great rotation in radiology at the time. And I was like, ooh, that, I want to follow in her footsteps. It sounded like she was getting a lot of great opportunities. So, but since then she has gone on to do many, many amazing things. After working at Mayo, she moved and worked at a larger health system in Colorado, where she worked around strategy, business development, growth. She also is a TEDx speaker who spoke on the four choices to overcome adversity. Has garnered over 100,000 views already. And she teaches around thought leadership, persuasive public speaking to those who really want to increase their impact by sharing their story. And she's also a business mentor and coach, specializing in helping people and professional women and physicians. We'll talk a little bit about the physician component as we go through, really helping them monetize their authority and really just create better strategies of how to interact with others, whether they're in a leadership role, working as a frontline provider, physician, surgeon, and really just continuing to grow and excel in whatever it is that they are passionate about. So, Carrie, thank you so, so much for being here, and we're excited just to kind of dive in.
I'm so excited. Let's do it.
So I always like to start off and just ask, you know, out of all the last, I think it's 20 plus years you've been in healthcare, like myself, what is one of your favorite moments in your career, one of the favorite things that you've been able to create?
I love that question because, you know, oftentimes it's the moments that we remember.
Yeah.
And it's the moments that other people remember as well. And when I think about that question, the moment is actually not when I was a healthcare executive. It was a moment when I was an entrepreneur helping physicians and healthcare leaders and other entrepreneurs. And I'd gone through a life-changing situation where my son was hospitalized for the first 5 months of his life in the NICU. And unfortunately, he passed away from a rare muscle disease. And one of the things that surprised me is that when you are met with death or, you know, some tragedy, people want to give you money. And I think it's, you know, people don't know what to say, right? Nobody knows what to say. Even if you've been through a similar tragedy, we don't know what to say to each other, you know, and we're scared to say the wrong thing.
Yeah.
And so we had all of these generous friends, family, colleagues donate to a fund. And we were like, gosh, what can we do with this fund?
Yeah.
And one of the experiences we had with our son was we had put him on palliative care. And when you're in the NICU, the only thing you want is normalcy. You want those moments of cuddling, of, you know, just, you know, no wires, just doing those normal things, holding them in a way that you could hold a healthy baby. And so we worked with NICU leadership and we used that money to form a palliative care room. Their palliative care program was really in its infancy. And so we created a really awesome room that had a queen size bed and a couch. It looked like a living room with a bed in it. And of course had all the medical hookups. And so we were really proud of this room. And I had recently, circle back and spoke with someone from the ethics committee of this hospital where we created this room. And she said, "Carrie, I am so upset. We had to put someone's name on that room. We got a huge donor for the palliative care program." And I was like, "Well, it's our room."
Yeah.
And I was like, "What are you talking about?" And she's like, "Well, after that room, we could not get any of the physicians to refer patients into that room. The nurses would say, hey, you know, I think that like it'd be really great if we could put them in the palliative care room. And they're like, no, I'm not ready, because they interpreted that as a failure on their part. And this nurse was so frustrated. She's like, well, just call it a serenity suite then.
Yeah.
And then that name was born. It was called the Serenity Suite, and then patients were able to use it. And through all of this repositioning of what we called it, they attracted a huge donor. They got like $2 million into this program. They attracted top physicians, and they have a palliative care program that's just excelling. And I was like, isn't that such a cool moment that like, we were, you know, my son was the catalyst for just a room in a hospital, right? And then, you know, through all of the people who surrounded us with love and support, they created something that's going to help so many more people. So I think really like having that conversation with her, even she was so frustrated, but like, it's Elliot's room. Elliot was the name of my son.
That's awesome.
Like, no, that's the point, right? Yeah. Like, and I think we can all remember, like, we are the catalyst for like someone all throughout our lives, right? And we may not know what that looks like in the moment, but if we can just trust that, right? And just take one step at a time, we'll get to where we want to be.
Right. Becomes a movement. So serenity suites everywhere. Yeah. Well, I remember we may have talked about this. I was both pregnant and then had just recently had my daughter when all of, you know, everything with Elliot was happening. And I just remember reading your caring bridge and the stories and seeing the moments of joy that we were able to create, whether it was like the pool parties or, you know, these little things that you were able to do, and just the staff being so supportive. So to be able to have those moments. And I think that in healthcare, it's so important where there is only so much that can be done sometimes for the long term, you know, outcome survival, or, you know, whatever the case may be for the patient and for their families, but to be able to give them joy in those moments along the way, it's, you know, those moments that really allow us all to continue, I think, through the other ones. So
it's so true. And it's important for, you know, people who are giving that clinical care to see that, to know that. I think that, like, you know, all of the physicians and nurses, everyone's overwhelmed and overworked. And it's like, can we just pause for a minute? Yeah. Like, these people changed our life in the most difficult time of our lives. Yeah. And that feeling of receiving that support created a whole new career for me, like a whole new trajectory, because I wanted to give back in a different way, right? Yeah. I didn't want to be the administrator of the hospital in whatever capacity, right? It's like, I need to help in a different way. I can help in a different way. I have a different skill set that can help that maybe wasn't realized before in my traditional role. I think everyone has that. Everyone has that thing that maybe they're not acknowledging, or maybe, you know, in their role, it's not acknowledged.
Right.
But when we discover that thing, that's when everything takes off.
Yeah. Well, and being forced to slow down, although none of us would wish any of those circumstances that you had to go through on anyone, but it, you know, being able to take those times to really connect in, like, what's important and what's, you know, what do you really enjoy and how do you want to, you know, serve, and how do you really feel like you're adding value, I think is so important. And One of the areas that I know that you started with as you started your own business and have continued to do is really help work with both physicians and leaders individually and with teams around burnout. And I know sometimes you and I were talking about earlier, you kind of get called in almost as an intervention coach, or like this individual, whether it's physician or otherwise, has got behavioral challenges, they're not meeting productivity standards, they're, you know, whatever it is that they're just really not kind of, the leadership is worried about whether or not they're going to be able to continue in their capacity, and you're kind of called in that way. But I know sometimes it can really be what kind of what's under the surface. What have you, is there an experience that you've had or something that you could share with us to really think differently about those kinds of situations as they come up?
Yeah, I think that, you know, we do see overwhelm as something we need to react to rather than getting to the root cause of it, yeah. Right? And I think that's part of the overwhelm, part of the frustration, right. And the us versus them is like, from a physician standpoint, they're seeing something, they're feeling something. Yeah. And typically it's, they don't feel seen by, you know, the people who are making the decisions. They don't feel heard. They don't feel valued. Yeah. And no matter what their position is, yeah. Right? No matter where they are in the hierarchy. And so, you know, when I get referrals that really feel like an intervention, yeah. You know, it requires a lot of questions from leadership yeah. too, right? Right. Of around, you know, their approach. I need to understand their approach right. to these situations. What environment are they expected to be working in? And, you know, there was a recent client that I had, and I'll change the details a bit for privacy, but this person, you know, was truly burning out. He was a super compassionate surgeon yeah. And really cared for his patients and saw solutions. He was very much solution oriented, and he yeah. just, you know, could not communicate in a way that was heard.
Yeah.
And he was so frustrated. And so we started working together, and like a week after, we worked together, they put him on leave. Mm-hmm. And that was devastating, like absolutely devastating. And, you know, I think what happens in those situations is we are so overcome with number one, anger, right? Mm-hmm. We feel like, how could they do this to me?
Right.
That sometimes, you know, when we just like turn it on its head to say, okay, like we know we can't change people, right? Like we can't change our spouses. Yeah. We can't. Nope. Like when we come to that, it's like, well, then what choices do I have?
Right.
And I think that when we uncover the actual choices that each one of us have, we can choose, you know, what we focus on. Right. Are we focusing on the problems? Are we focusing on what we desire? Are we focusing on potential solutions? But at the end of the day, like, are we really connected with yeah. what we really know, with who we really are, yeah. with, you know, why we behave the way we did. Like this person definitely had inappropriate behavior, right?
Yeah.
Definitely was not kind to some people.
Yeah.
And, you know, but at the end of the day, that wasn't who he was, right? It was just him masking, you know, the real underlying
right.
fear through anger, through frustration, because feeling that fear means like admitting something to yourself.
Right.
And I think like as physicians, you have to know the answer. Or yeah. you're out, right? Like think about the training
right.
that all of our physician colleagues go
yeah.
through. Like what got them to be these awesome, successful physicians is not what helps them create a thriving, fulfilling career, whether they're in a leadership position
right.
or not. And I think it's that flip of taking back that ownership
yeah.
of who they want to be through, you know, a series of, you know, really some deep awareness and then some repatterning of their thoughts and,
right.
and beliefs. And that stuff happens fast. You
yeah.
know, this physician within the first 30 days of working together was like, he couldn't believe how good he felt.
Yeah.
Things were still happening. The environment hadn't changed, right? Like things
right.
were still happening with his colleagues that were frustrating, but we're able to reframe it when we come from the feeling of it first and then turn that feeling into more aligned
right.
action instead of just reacting to
right.
the situation.
Right. When I found too throughout my career is I've had various physician interactions, amazing ones and ones that were not either probably of our best moments. And, you know, I think a lot of times too, it's like, again, you know, pausing and really getting to the, okay, you know, let's talk about like, where is the frustration coming from? Like, has something happened or has something not happened? Sometimes I think that's a lot of it. They aren't seeing action. They aren't seeing resolution. They're feeling like it's never going to get better. And then they are feeling like you're not hearing them. And so being able to have that create a safe space where they, because maybe they've tried to, I think particularly having been in new leadership roles, I know you have too, and many others you have, you know, they may have tried to share their concerns 3, 4, 10 times before with previous leadership and it not been heard. So now they feel like, why should I try again? And so just trying to ask those questions to really understand what is really the concern at the heart of it, you know, and how you can move forward is so important. Along those lines, are there questions that you typically kind of would discuss first with, you know, maybe the physician or the person that you're working with? And then also similarly, like with leadership, sometimes I feel like understanding what success looks like from either side, like there's such gray zone that people don't really know what that looks like. Are there things that you found that leaders maybe should be asking or physicians should be thinking about when they're in those situations?
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things that's important, even before you ask questions, mm-hmm. is acknowledging that, yeah. like, let's say it's an administrator. So yeah. I was an administrator, right? I was vice president, and I had a physician coming in, and he was, you know, or she was upset about something, right? The truth of the matter is I had fear, too. Because whatever the outcome was of this conversation, it was going to mean something about me. Right. At least that's what I thought, right? Yeah. So, like, when I reflect on, you know, we were talking about this, what we could have done better, it's like, oh, go in before you go out, right? Like, okay, what is this really triggering within me? What am I making this mean about me?
Yeah.
What am I focusing on, right? So when you're in a conversation with somebody, most people are focusing on what they're going to say next. Most people are focusing on, you know, that person, like, what a jerk, what's happening? Yeah. They're using stronger language usually. And so that's why, like, nobody feels seen and heard. And so, like, for the physicians listening, just know that, like, you and the administrator are there is nothing different. You both have pressures. You both have fears. They may be have different sources, but it's like when we can see each other from a human standpoint. So, you know, I really listen to how the person across the table or Zoom or whatever is talking to me, what language they're using. Are they coming from, I need to just fix it energy? Yeah. Are they coming from, oh my gosh, someone else needs to fix this. There's nothing else I can do, right? And then I ask typically feeling questions first, right? If they're coming from this place of like, I just feel like I'm not seen or heard. I just feel like no matter what I do, nobody cares. Like I can't get in the room. I can't, whatever. It's like, well, how does that feel?
Yeah.
What do you think that's about? Right. Like really like slowing this down. I think we get into solutions too fast.
Yeah.
And then we make solutions out of fear. And when we create solutions out of fear, they're never going to get us to where we need to be.
Yeah.
So we need to like neutralize that fear, get to the root of it. These are the difficult, uncomfortable conversations that most people haven't learned how to have. It's not difficult conversations. It's not crucial conversations. It's advocacy conversations, right? It's advocating for the person.
It's like partnership.
Across the room from you, for the team, for the project, whatever it is you're working on.
Yeah. No, and I think it comes down to I think as a leader, physician, or administrator, you know, having been the administrative role too, there is such pressure to feel like you should have A, been aware of the issue, which you may not have had any idea was going on, or that it was still going on. And then there's such pressure to feel like you can find an answer and solution and just solve it. And so like in that moment, particularly if it's, you know, gotten a little heated and you've, you know, got the person across the table. And so to be able to take that moment of like vulnerability and say, you know, I'm sorry this is still happening. I wasn't aware this was still happening, or I'm going to have to look into that because I didn't know, or I need to talk to 3 other people. And can I come back to you next week and let's talk about it? You know, just Wednesday work, you know, having that, as you said, just slowing it down to both, you know, ask more questions, but also give yourself space so that you, because I know I've done it too. I made the mistake of overcommitting, right? Like I've overcommitted of like, oh yeah, we can do this. And meanwhile, I go and then they leave and I try to fix it, or I get overwhelmed by 20, you know, other things that same day and it doesn't happen. And then you start to lose a little bit of trust versus saying like, you know, I need more information or I have some ideas, but let me, if you don't mind, I'd like to think about them for a little while and like let's regroup. I think taking those moments and trusting that, yes, there are emergencies in healthcare, obviously, but being able to take, there's most of the things that people are frustrated with are going to allow for some time, whatever that looks like, to really process and come up with a better solution, ideally together, than just kind of feeling like you have to decide in that moment. So, absolutely.
Totally.
Yeah.
That's like such a good point, right? Because I think that, you know, so often we're used to getting external accolades to validate ourselves.
Right.
If we have the solution, then we're worthy.
Right.
Then we know, then we deserve to be there.
Yeah.
Right. And so it's, I love that, like, what a simple tool, right? To just slow it down.
Yeah.
Right. And what if you didn't know the answer?
Right.
And like, I like to think of, you know, those leaders that like, think about one leader that you respected immensely, right? Like everybody who's listening, think of that like one person.
Yeah.
Were they the loudest person in the
no.
room? Were they the one that were just telling everybody what to do and the answers?
No.
No.
They were the
right?
calmest.
They were, yeah.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
The calmest, like the.
The calmest,
yeah.
Yes.
And then, but when they spoke, you were like, oh yes, that's it. That's
yes.
what we do. And I do think, you know, there's just that fear of, and you and I were talking about it earlier too, of not knowing the answer, or if we do take a risk, you know, is it going to be successful? And if it's, you know, really doesn't happen or it's not successful, then we are a bad administrator, a bad physician, a, you know, leader, whatever that role is. And so, being willing to take space to both figure out better options and to create, you know, the opportunity that we're going to try things and it's not going to work. I think that I always call it like a positive, you know, positive questioning attitude. You know, we want to say like, you know, innovation, but you know what? Yeah, we're going to try a dozen things and half of them are not going to work.
Yeah.
But like, let's try
yeah.
them with thought, but you know, relatively quickly versus dragging them out and then, you know, continuing for it to be iterative versus stagnant, I think is so key for sure.
Right. I mean, just taking action relieves
yeah.
stress. Right. And it's like, that is the definition of innovation.
Yeah.
Like it's innovation is never going to work the first
right.
time, or it's not going to be innovative.
Yeah.
Right. It shouldn't work the first time.
Right.
And you know, it's just, it's so interesting. Like when you trust that,
right.
right. When you trust that failure means nothing about you, when you are really tapped into what you know,
yeah.
what you believe and are choosing that calm confidence, non-judgment of yourself, then that's when you can really tap into your own creativity. You know, it's
yeah.
connecting with yourself first. And that's something that 100% is a skill set.
Yeah.
I have grown so much. There's no way I was doing that
yeah.
when I was,
early
when
on.
I was, you know, in my traditional healthcare role. Like
yeah.
there was just, there's too much speed, too much coming at you, too much pressure to be, to do, to have the answer. And I look back and I think, you know, that connecting with yourself is the most important skill set that I wish I had then.
Yeah.
Because it slows things down even when there's always chaos. Like
yeah.
there's always stuff coming at you. Like you can't change that.
Right.
But your reaction does not have to meet the frequency of that, you know, everything's
right.
an emergency.
Yeah.
And that's
yeah.
when we see those leaders that are awesome and you're like, oh my gosh, he's
yeah.
such a good, or she is such a good leader.
Right.
That's what they're doing.
Yeah, that's one of the things I know both of us work with clients on very early on is that, you know, I always go through like the what not to do list or, you know, what are those things that are consuming your time, your energy that really either you don't have to be there, you can give your other, you know, one of your team members an opportunity to kind of step into that place so that you have space. And ultimately it's so that you can move the bigger things forward. But the main reason is so that you get time to have those moments for reflection and to really, you know, continue to maintain
yeah.
where you need to be. Are there like practices or even questions, you know, things that you've found that you would give people who are listening and want to be like, how do I listen to myself? How do I tune inward? What kind of things would you, or the couple of things that maybe you'd recommend to get for us beginners?
Yeah. Well, there's a couple things, because I think, you know, what you said is really important, right? When there's, you know, when you have so much on your plate, it's like, how can you possibly do this? So I really think this kind of starts with going through a delegation process, even if you feel like you have no one to delegate to. Because it brings us awareness. It's like, I have a ton of tools, but like, let's do a tool that will actually get you more time and help you practice more awareness. So I was at a conference early on in my entrepreneurial career, and there was a project manager from NASA there. Mm-hmm. And he was like the project manager who like sent the first images back from Pluto. It took him 15 years to do it. And he's probably the reason that Pluto is no longer a planet. but he, everyone's like, how do you like keep a project like that going? He's like, every single thing that you are doing can be down to 5 steps. And so I use that 5-step rule from that talk. And so I look at delegation as 5 steps. So one of the things that, you know, I think is really helpful for people is, you know, I have a lot of people coming on the calls and they're like so overwhelmed, and they're like listing off everything that they need to do. It's like, okay, well, what's the one thing right now? What's the one like urgent thing? And they'll say the thing, right? Whatever it is. Like, but I have no one to delegate to. It's like, okay, well, let's walk through these steps. So if everything can be, you know, 5 steps, what are the 5 steps of delegation? So it's really acknowledging, what is the constraint I'm coming up against? Like, what is the problem that I am trying to solve? Most of the time, that's a really hard question. So it like slows things down to say, okay, well, I'm really trying to solve the fact that, you know, whatever, we need to get more patients through, we've got a waiting list, whatever it is, right? It's like, okay, so what is the actual desired result or the task from this delegation?
Right.
Okay. So notice, even if you're delegating to yourself, you're like creating some clarity. Actions. Well, you know, then you look at, well, I need to get this group of people together. We need to have a conversation about this. I need to get buy-in for this. Yeah. And it's like, okay, we can really look at like what those steps are. And every time we get to the second question, people are like, oh, well, I just need to do this. Right. It's like this big long thing. Yeah. And they're like, oh, wait, but I just need to call this one person, right? But then it's like, okay, but what's the importance of this? Why is this a priority?
Right.
What is the importance in where you're trying to get to? Why is this important? Well, I don't know if it is, because I got this thing over here, right?
Right.
So it like allows you to ask that question. And then one of the next pieces, which is really important, is like, what are my core values in executing or delegating this? And that seems like, what do you mean core values? That's just something that's like up on the wall with the organization. But like, think about it. Like, if my core value is transparency, and that's important to me because I hate when other people make decisions and I have no idea why they're making these decisions, then how am I going to behave differently, whether I'm delegating or whether I'm doing it myself, right? Yeah. So it's a really important thing. And then it's really asking yourself, okay, so, what skill sets do I need in order to do this?
Yeah.
Why is this person that I have in mind to delegate the exact right person? And so when you just go through and answer these questions, number one, it's taking that action and it's slowing down, right? It's not getting a meeting and then creating more work like we do in meetings. It's like really thinking through it. So I would recommend walking through those steps. Just pick one thing on your to-do list and walk through those steps. Yeah.
No, I love that. I think that always thinking about the what versus the who, I think we always go in delegation, particularly to like the who can we delegate to? And there's a time and a role for that, especially if you're trying to like build your bench and help people develop. But it really, when you're looking at your own workload or the projects, the initiatives and organization, it's like, okay, what things do you really have to be involved in? What needs to happen next? Because you may not be able to, and you may not be able to, I'm sure you found too, like you may not be able to delegate the entire thing, but there's a lot of components underneath that to really even just get it started. And then I think too, going through and saying like, well, what really, I was just speaking with a client this morning and who's, we're going through kind of setting the next quarter of initiatives. And it was just, you know, kind of listing. My coach had the same approach with me yesterday. She's like, you can pick two things like for the month of March, like what are two things? And then of course I tried to add subtopics under there because, you know, we add by 20 other things, but you know, we were making through and it's like, here's the top three things that he wanted to move forward over the next few months, back that up to March. And it was like really under those two, you know, two of those things, part of them sometimes can just be having a conversation. And a lot of times and then we start to overthink, at least I do, of we want to get everything perfect before we have that conversation, before we have that meeting. And a lot of times we already know many of the, you know, things that we need to have, and we know those similar outcomes. So under, you know, giving ourselves to like what really, really has to happen. And it depends on the players and the relationships and where you are with, you know, those things, but what really has to happen for you to move that forward, it's often a lot less than what you think it may be to really get it started. So I think those are great, great questions. Maybe we can have those as an outline. So absolutely.
Yes, I love that. I love that because quite frankly, like we don't know like the next, you know,
five steps.
Yeah. Right? Like you have to take the first step because that informs the second step.
Right.
Right. And like when you're just open to the first step, like you are going to get more information. Yeah. And with that information, it's going to shift what you do next. Yeah. And so it's patience, yeah. Right? Which none of us are good at.
No.
But it's like, okay, well, what if it's just one step right. at a time? Like,
yeah.
What if overwhelm was a choice because right. I'm making it this big project? Yeah. But right now, it's just having one conversation, right?
Yeah. I know, Carrie, you work with both teams and individuals. Is there something that you've seen that's been helpful? Are there any advice as people are trying to move initiatives forward, create change about, you know, having individual approach versus, you know, when to kind of know you need to get everyone together as a team, or any just overall thoughts that you've seen be more successful when you are bringing a team together, you know, what are things that people need to keep in mind if you're addressing something like trying to find burnout or you're really trying to, you know, make change in a group?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think, you know, it's always beneficial to bring in the team. However, you know, every team has its own dynamic, right? Every team has its own dynamic. And what I find when a leader brings me in to work with the team is that there is inherently a lack of trust mm-hmm. within the team.
Yeah.
And that comes from the form of like people not doing what they say they're going to do, yeah. right? Not holding their own standards for integrity, because of burnout, because of overwhelm, yeah. right? But, you know, when we can spend real time having real conversations about feeling safe within the team,
yeah.
having trust within the team, that's where the actual solutions come from. Most people just want to, you know, there's all these presentations on psychological safety yeah. and all the things, and yeah. we come at it from such an academic place.
Yeah.
And that defeats the whole purpose. Like, can we just know that there's research and this stuff yeah. is important? Like, we don't need to
build
like,
connection.
You know, yeah. but like, right. Yeah. So it's like, but what does that mean to each individual? Mm-hmm. What does trust mean for you? How do you trust people, right?
Right.
When do you feel safe? To, you know, when do you feel seen and heard? And obviously those questions are customized, but it's like, I see people leaning away from the uncomfortable conversations. Mm-hmm. I see the leaders saying, ooh, let's not talk about that. Yeah. It's like, well, then you're going to spend a lot of money to bring me in and not get the results.
Right.
So, you know, so then it's like, well, let's you and I work together so that you can feel a little more safe yeah. and vulnerable. And those are words that people don't want to talk about, right? Those are the things. But I can tell you after going through like major adversity and death, and every one of us has had them, we all have experienced that.
Yeah.
And so we're with, you know, resisting bringing it into our world professionally. Like we are one person. This is part of showing up as who you are. This is part of like feeling good yeah. about showing up is really like aligning with that authentic yeah. piece within you.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that some of my, I talked about this in a previous podcast, but like some of my moments of greatest connection with my team were ones where, you know, I truly was at that point either of just full overwhelm and all the kind of situation maybe came tumbling out, but in the more poised moments were those moments of like vulnerability of being able to say, you know what, yeah, here's what's been working and here's what I recognize is not working. I want to also hear from you guys what you see that's not been working. And also here's the vision of what we can try to create together, and I need your help. And so really, you know, bringing it back to that, like, we're all human, we're all in this together. We don't, not a single one of us know all the answers or what the exact, you know, next 20 steps are. But having that connection is so, so key to just start rebuilding that trust. Whether you've been in the role for 10 years and things haven't been changing or you come in new, I think it still can be a very similar, you know, flow to those conversations. And just really knowing that when you do get the concerns, when you do get that feedback that things are, they're frustrated, that it's not personal. Most of the time it's not personal. So.
Right. And most people stop there, by the way. Right. They stop at the problem. They stop at the complaining. They give everybody just wants to be seen and heard. So it becomes a complaint fest.
Right.
And like, that's not where this stops, right? Like that's the conversation we have around like, okay, what's the current state, right? And what is it that you want? Like when we can get people from like, we want to know what's happening. Like we need to hear the dirty truth.
Right.
But it's like, and like, let's think about what do you want, what you want as a team, what you're capable of. Yeah. And then what are your solutions for it? Like when we can get people into that solution place, then it takes the pressure off the leader and it helps the leader just trust their team. Yeah. Right. And it helps the team feel heard and understood. Yeah. And so it's just getting rid of the culture. I work with this group that was like, had such a culture of complaining. And it's just like, at what point are we no longer available for that as our culture? Yeah. Like there are some decisions that have to be made and it starts from the top.
Right.
When, you know, what you're allowing.
Right.
And that takes some bravery.
Yeah. I'm working on a presentation and one of the slides that's in there is like the best way to predict the future is to create it. And I love like the create word too, because I think shifting that mindset, that approach from the complaining of just this is where we are to like this is where we want to go and how do we like create the future for ourselves. I think shifting into that energy is just so important.
I love that.
Well, Carrie, we could talk all day, but what's one thing looking back that you wish, a piece of advice that you wish you would have given yourself 10, 15, 20 years ago that might help someone else? So much, I know, but.
Oh. You know, you are good enough.
No,
you don't have to prove. You have nothing to prove. I think that when I look, and part of that's, you know, with getting older, but I look at how much stress that I invoked in myself.
Yeah.
Because I felt like I had to know the answer. I didn't feel safe to ask questions because I thought I just needed to know.
Right.
And if I could just give myself permission to just ask questions for greater understanding, like that's how you feel that sense of ease. Yeah. And that is, it's an easy thing to do. Slow down. And what's the next question I can ask?
I love that. Well, you all are enough. So thank you so much. Thank you, Carrie, for being here today. And we will share Carrie's information so you can reach out to her if you have questions or potentially interested in having her work with one of your physicians or leaders or one of your team. But just thank you all for being here today. And that is a wrap. All right.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
The popular buzzword we've been seeing everywhere is AI. But what we all want to know is how we can implement and use it to our advantage when it comes to improving margins, accelerating cash flow, and optimizing staff performance. There's a one-stop shop using cloud-based predictive analytics. MGMA Analytics is your AI-enabled tool that upscales technology you've already been paying for, so you can silo your disparate systems and make data-backed business decisions. Visit mgma.com/analytics and see how AI can revolutionize your finances and operations. Again, visit mgma.com/analytics today.